Blog Talk Radio.
When I look into your eyes, it's like watching the night sky. Oh, beautiful sunrise, well, there's so much to hope. Just like the old stars, see that you've come so far to be right where you are. How old is your soul? I won't give up on us, even if the skies get rough. I'm giving you all my love, I'm still looking up. I won't give up on us, even if the skies get rough. I'm giving you all my love, I'm still looking up. Even if stars, they burn, some even fall to the earth. We've got a lot to learn. God knows we're worth it.
Everybody, and welcome to Garden of Enlightenment with Lee U. Wilder. We are going to have a fabulous night of poetry with fabulous readers. And, you know, this is a place where we appreciate our writers. And so I want to tell you a little bit about ourselves. We are the late night poet group, and you can find us on allpoetry.com. And just to let you know a little bit more, we had a bunch of poets donate their poetry for books that you can find on allpoetry.com. They're from poets from around the world, and that's how these shows are supported. So please check them out on Amazon.com, Late Night Poets Anthologies. And there's a whole bunch of them there, whatever tickles your fancy, dark poems, central poems, regular type of poems of nature, you can find them there. So since we have so much poems, we're going to go ahead and get started and picking up our callers. And if for whatever reason your phone line drops, please call us back, because sometimes this, you know, electronic system just likes to kick you right off and then you have to call back in. So please call back in. So let me see, 585, you know who this is, it's the Mr. Buttery Voice. Hi, Lot.
Bonsoir, Louie.
Bonsoir. How are you, Laurent?
Well, alive, which is always good.
Yeah, I'm kind of dingy today. So when I get dingy, I get silly. Some people get cranky. I get silly.
Ding dong.
Oh, my goodness.
She's dead.
She sure is. Okay, let's pick up our next caller, and I know who this is. This is my Scottish sweetheart, Miss Katie. I'm forgetting everything tonight. Please help me.
I am.
Hi, Katie.
Hi,
and thank you. You are a godsend tonight because my brain is not working. I talked to Phil today, and I said, I'm just going to have to do the best I can because the marbles weren't working.
Oh.
Yeah, too much. You missed all the excitement. I had a bunch of family emergencies this week, and I forgot to oil my squeaky chair. So, but I'm so happy you're here. I'm so happy you're here. Thank you.
My pleasure.
All righty, girl. And caller 239, who am I speaking with?
Hi, my name is Bill Schiller.
Hi, Bill. How are you doing this evening?
Relatively neato.
And thank you for offering to grease my – I keep forgetting to get the W-40 and put out my chair out of misery, but when you got a lot of stuff on your mind, you just forget to grease your office chair. Okay, welcome, Bill, and caller 707, who am I speaking with?
Irish Rose.
Hi, Gwen. How are you this evening? So happy you called in.
Hey, Gwen.
Thank you. Hi, Laurent. Hi, everyone. I'm well, thank you. Thank you.
welcome.
Yeah.
So Katie's here to help rescue me, which was a great surprise, and I know she's on vacation, and I apologize for putting you to work.
That's okay.
But I'm happy she's here. Okay, so I'm going to hand it off to you, Katie, and yes, dingy. That's what Frank was asking. Hey, Phil.
Oh, my. It's going to be fun tonight, hon. Right, we're ready to roll and lock and roll. But please bear in mind that I am just a little bit, a little bit happier than perhaps you are, but I'm going to be very good and be a clever girl and not slur too much. Okay, so we have Idiom, I think it's Idiom, by Becky Upchurch. And Gwen, could you read this for us, please?
Sure, thank you very much. Begin poem, Idiom, by Becky Upchurch. I wonder how well I know my bluebird, my buck blue, but so what? Do I feed it or let it go? Chat or talk deeply, for that alone, I'd buy one. Or buy a cow, would bring me grits, gifts. I'd honor its blackness, so dark too. You'd laugh at me, would I end up eating it, or would I send its gifts to you to be dark together? Maybe you should have a bluebird first, that buck blue to better understand idioms. Eat your humble pie, swallow your pride, then get your blackbird to protect me when we fly. Huh. I'd eat crow for that. End poem.
You did such a fabulous read of Becky Upchurch's poem, Gwen. Thank you so much, Idiom. I really enjoyed the imagery in here, especially her ending, the last two stanzas. Maybe you should have a bluebird first, that book blue to better understand idioms. Eat your humble pie, swallow your pride, which we all need to do, then get you a blackbird to protect me when we fly. I'll eat crow for that. I always love that punchline, and she did that so well, and her imagery all the way from the top to the bottom is just spectacular. What did you think, Laurent?
I thought it was a great great play on words, an idiom, mm-hmm. A fine Bukowski poem. It holds together really well, but if I have to pick a stanza, maybe you should have a bluebird first, that buck blue to better understand idioms, eat your humble pie, swallow your pride, and only then get you a blackbird to protect you in the fly. I'd eat crow for that. Nice play on words. Nice construction. I enjoy the form. I enjoy the poem.
I agree. Excellent comment. And what did you think about the poem, Katie?
Oh, yes, I do. Well, the play on words was excellent. It really was. I love anything like that. It's just so clever. And I like Laurent. I particularly like that stanza. That was so cool. I'd eat crow for that. I just think it's such a clever way to end it. I brought it all together. And, you know, knowing what that actually means, it's more powerful. So very well done. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Wonderful comment. And it's so great to hear you laughing, Katie. And Bill, what did you think of her wonderful poem? Bill?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't quite hear you there. But I've been thinking what a perfect example of idiom this is in terms of how a group of words means its own thing, different than what any of the individual words would represent. And she's done such a great job of expressing idioms, and especially in that very last line, I'd eat crow for that. Which, you know, has its own meaning. And the idea of going dark, too. So I'm just really impressed with the way Becky has come up with a title and then followed it through the very end and stayed true to what the theme is. Really impressive, Becky.
Yeah, she did. Thank you, Bill. Wonderful comment. And Gwen, you did such a wonderful read of her poem. I enjoyed listening to you, and I would like to know what you thought.
Oh, I really enjoyed her play on words. I thought it was so clever, you know, and it was way cool. It was a neat piece, and I just think it just flowed so wonderfully. It was so clever. Great job.
Agreed. Thank you so much, and everybody, wonderful comments. And we're ready for our next poem, Miss Katie.
Sorry, I hadn't unmuted. I do apologize. Yes,
that's
I'll be
okay.
One second. Here we have, right, the next one we have is, it's Crimson Smile by A.R. Mundell. And I will read this one. Get my voice working.
She has a recording for that one.
Oh, brilliant. Well done. Okay.
Well, that'll save your voice and my voice. So here we go. Thank you for announcing that. And here is Amy's poem, Crimson Smile.
Crimson Smile by Amy Mundell. Morning rose was white as snow, blending into the blizzard at his core, waiting beneath an umbrella, as crimson as they made his back, his regrets. The hue of a beloved ribbon, now fallen from foreign love's falling locks. The red of his inner robe, of red lips, in vibrant smile and fizzing energy, faded now into that blank cold, the void where those things shall never be again. Watching, yearning, the hint of spark, breath of life, his name spoken by those lips. Fingers play their song, calling his spirit, pleading for one more drop of him. The answer is silent as the snow, as the void, as he plays each day to no avail. Till the strings cut, finger pads bleed, yet still his shiji is as snow. Silent as his unmarked grave, his being melted down to crimson, down to unsinging soul. Scars scab, pull and ache, till liquor burns, memories churn and red blooms unmarked skin. Pressed his hand to branded mark, shown out as his ruin. A token of undying love to anchor him, an umbrella to shield him from that snow, that red, a place his thoughts take shelter, a promise not to forget or give up hope, for his name to resonate from his future, and fizzing crimson energy would laugh for him once more. Years stream by, mountains come and go, and on one in particular. Summer warms the shaded trees, chatter comes and goes, dizzy catches on the breeze, its melody cut raw. A song that only two have heard, in a cave which was their world. Desperate fingers catch startled drift, alive with knowing gaze. A stranger's face, a stranger's wrist, but he'd know him all his days. Crimson ribbon in his hair, his lips, his laugh, his smile. His Gigi, back from Simon Floyd, returning summer air. Eyes grow wide, his chest grows tight, as blizzard white robes thaw. And poem.
Oh my goodness, what a beautiful, absolute beautiful read on Amy's poem. I was looking at her author's notes, which she was talking about Chinese culture and their stringed instruments. And the Xing, which I may be pronouncing it wrong, which I probably am, is a soulmate kindred spirit, but more somewhere along the lines of the mirror to your soul, yourself. They know you so well that your movements are in concert with your words synchronized, your actions unified, or a person truly understands me in the spiritual world or intimate friend. Someone who knows you inside out, completely understands you. And then she talks about the morning robes. White is the morning color in Chinese culture. So white is worn at funerals during the morning period. You know, I'm not going to give a long comment since I read her author's notes, but she describes that when she starts off her poem. And then, you know, just a different stanza. Where she talked about fingers playing their song, calling his spirit, pleading for one more drop of him, where you just, you know, that unbearable sadness when you leave someone for just another voice, another smile, you know, to behold in their face. And, you know, she just, you know, talks about the mourning process here. As she, you know, we cry out in mourning, but she says here it's silent as his unmarked grave is being melted down to crimson, down to his unsung soul, deeply, deeply moving and deeply visual. What did you think about this poem, Nurat?
Pretty stunning piece. I enjoyed the references to the Chinese philosophy and the instruments, the Shiji, it's pretty fascinating.
Thank you,
the strings cut from the finger pads. What? I'm sorry, am I done? I wasn't sure.
No.
Okay.
No, I was just telling you thank
sure
you for
thanking
pronouncing. Yes.
Oh, okay, I got you. So the strings cut, finger pads bleed, yet still Shiji is as snow, silent as his unmarked grave is being melted down to crimson, down the unsinging soul, after which we get a series of visuals that are really resonating. And as the time passes, still she yearns, but he comes back. His Shiji, rather, comes back from the silent wood, returning summer air. His eyes go wide, his chest goes tight, his blizzard white robes thaw. I'm assuming at this point we have spring. It's a marvelous poem with depth, with layers, not all of which I understand, but upon rereading it, I'm sure it'll come completely clear.
Thank you, Nurat. Wonderful comment. And what did you think about the poem, Bill?
Yes, I love this for a couple of reasons. Initially, it reminded me of this incredible short story by Conrad Aiken called "Silent Snow" and "Silent Snow, Secret Snow." And the character in that story has this some intermittent episodes of just his mind going blank into this snow blind kind of setting where he sees nothing, feels nothing, because everything is just this white morass of silent snow, secret snow that is in his mind. So I've thought about that in reading this and how the snow in that story represents nothingness or loss. And I'm hearing that in this verse.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple things that struck me. You touched on the white mourning robes that are part of Asian culture, the reason being that that fabric was traditionally seen as more affordable than colored fabric. But the other thing that kind of jumps out at me is the idea of a crimson umbrella up there in, what is that, the second stanza? Because the crimson umbrella is an international symbol today for the rights of sex workers. And I know that the verse has nothing to do with protecting the rights of sex workers, but that crimson umbrella reference is kind of jumping out at me because it's it's almost as well known in circles as the pink ribbon is for breast cancer. So it's just an interesting kind of inclusion. My favorite part of the verse are the stanzas that deal with each sense in terms of like our five senses or six senses, some people would say. The first one is refers to the color red as in terms of something that's seen, the vibrant smile, all that deals with things that you would see and how those dissipate and disappear into the blank cold. And then it goes to watching. And then the next deals with touch, fingers playing the song. So it's covering all the different elements of how one would recognize loss in something through seeing, hearing, touching. I really appreciate how the writer, A.R. Mundo, approached that. Really great verse. And I think those who advocate for the rights of sex workers would appreciate it, too.
Thank you, Bill.
I'm sorry.
And thank you. And Gwen, what did you think of this gorgeous poem by Amy?
Oh, yeah. It's an amazing thing. And it's to me it struck me about the experience. You know, every culture has different expressions of experience of death and different traditions. And there are different points that people experience of that process. And I thought that this was well laid out to help us to construct what was going on. And even though we're not of the same culture, you know, she's defining the different things that are the signals or the things that indicate these emotions that are being worn or sung or whatever. And I thought she constructed it really, really well and put a lot of effort into it. And it really is a poem that deserves probably more than three or four readings to really absorb this experience. And I really enjoyed it. I think that the writer really deserves kudos for this.
Agreed. And wonderful comment, everybody. So we are ready for our next poem, Miss Katie.
Sorry, I'm here. I couldn't find my little button. It had gone astray. Oh, dear. I'm not my usual setup. I'm lying all over this bed, being very lazy. I apologize for that. I'll get better at this. So we have Pick by Dark Night of the Soul. And I shall give this one a read. A little tick against my name. There we are. Tick, tick. Right. Dark Night of the Soul.
It's not there.
Oh, the humanity? Can you see
it? Yeah, it's there. It just now posted.
Is it there?
It just posted.
Okay.
You might have to refresh your page. I have to refresh my page all the time.
Okay.
Have I got the right one, or have I?
Yeah.
You click on the link. It goes to a poem called "Oh, the Humanity" by Dark Night of the Soul.
That's what thrown me. Okay, got it. So, "Oh, the Humanity." Herb Morrison was in good voice that day. Chicago radio reporter on the scene, waiting for the mighty Zeppelin to arrive. Arriving in Lakehurst on its transatlantic crossing. He might have been thinking of family. Maybe a New Jersey steak dinner. A dashing fellow in blue serge coat and top hat. A striking example of his time. The reporting began most ordinarily, reciting events quite factually, as ropes descended from the dirigible that stood quiet in its last moments. She had made the same 10 trips quite easily throughout the years just past. 97 were carried within that May Day. 35 would be lost. Most striking of all was his sincerity when the Hindenburg burst into flames, his emotions raw, honest, heartfelt, and the listener shared his disbelief. His weary voice wailed of humanity as fires burned through steel, through flesh. They felt ever booked word, suppressed tear, the humanity came from him. His recording lives on its posterity, sharing unfathomable tragedy, the death of innocence, the loss of innocence, the fall of a great flying machine. Herb Morrison was in good voice that day. End poem.
Exactly. I think that, you know, that image, that haunting voice, just, you know, just something that you never forget. And I'm going to read this off in this real quick. The title comes from the famous line of the recording itself. Oh, the humanity. It's the most distinctive line from it. The recording of the Hindenburg tragedy is one of the most evocative moments of the 20th century. Herb Morrison's heartfelt reporting heightened the listener's experience of tragedy. 36 died that day, 35 on the Zeppelin itself, and one on the ground. It was a fluke that the recording survived. Most of the era were not saved. And so I would love to hear what you thought about this poem, Laura.
Well, I'll echo the AM. It is one of the most evocative bits of film from history that you'll ever see. What touched me, among other things, was his weary voice wailed of humanity. His fire burned through steel, through flesh. It felt every broken word, the suppressed tear. Humanity came from him. As you just mentioned, Louie, that phrase, oh, the humanity, his voice does sound broken. You can feel in his voice the sincerity of the horror that you're looking at. It's like a train wreck in slow motion watching that thing. You know what's happening. You've heard about it. You've read about it. Now you see it and you go, wow. I think this poem really brought us all of that in a very smooth and well-constructed way. Excellent.
Agreed. Excellent comment. Thank you so much for that, Matt. And what did you think about the poem, Dale? Hello? Bill?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. My phone is kind of zooming in and out. But Dark Night of the Soul, I think it's great that it's, you know, been something that's happened since the 1930s. And all these years later, here we are talking about the Hindenburg. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. I love history. And that expression, oh, the humanity, is such an iconic quote that immediately evokes images of the Hindenburg, just like when you hear the term, a day that will forever live in infamy, reminds you of Pearl Harbor. So I really appreciate the Dark Night of the Soul took time to focus on this terrible accident, the tragedy, and I can almost hear that announcer reacting to what he was seeing as the ship exploded. Ironically, more people lived or more people survived than died on the Hindenburg, which is kind of something that's been lost in history. But I appreciate that Dark Night of the Soul has taken time to remind us of this tragedy and given us something to be mindful of. And I love it when art meets history, which is what Dark Night of the Soul has done here. Brilliant.
Thank you, Bill. And what did you think about Dark Night of Soul poem, Gwen?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was away. I wasn't able to hear it or access it, so
okay.
I have to pass on this one.
All right. Okay, Sue. And Katie, what did you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can imagine. I hadn't realized, first of all, that that was from a quote, Dark Night of the Soul, from that particular day. I hadn't heard the commentary, but how sad, and I can imagine it must have been the most horrific. I've obviously watched it on TV like most people have, but to actually be there and the sights and the sounds must have been awful. So beautifully written, and you could feel the pain, you could feel you could feel the sincerity, obviously, as well. Beautifully done. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Katie. And we are ready for our next Front Page Tip.
Okay. And next we have up My Muse by Laurent. And would you give this a read for us, please, Laurent?
Yes, I will. Okay. My Muse. She is a petulant mistress, an abstract of shadows. Voice without form, words without text. Her dystopian images require translation, softer approach to what I create in the ashes of what came before. Tear it all down and rebuild anew. But why, says I, with a lingering sigh? No need to reinvent the wheel. Just adding a spoke or two will probably do. But no, comes the answer. Death is an absolute. A terminal refinement of life. Writing is no weakling pursuit. Will you deny your phoenix? Kill and destroy what you wrote in the past. Acknowledge the new, the visceral. Open tainted eyes that see and bleed red from their whites. Make a brick of stone. Stone of steel. Steel from thin air. Air from the fire inside of you. You call me Prometheus. A gifter of flame, or a poetic Zeus who should hurl his bolts against old forms of verse? We argue, fret, critical of divergent paths. My muse pretends not to hear, but one ear is cocked for surrender, words primed for the sundering, the self, ego writ, subservient to a voice without form, whose words without text I reject without rancor. My muse is a bitch, a voice I know well, an angel from heaven, merged with the devil from hell.
There we go. To say, you know, here is another spectacular ending, you know, how it starts off. And then I love your ending verse, you know, with that punch. But I have got to say my favorite is where she's speaking to you. Make a brick of stone, stone of steel, steel from thin air, air from the fire inside of you. You know, just the passion and, you know, trying to talk you into doing it her way, to write her words. And then I love the next verse. Do you call me Prometheus, a gifter of flame? Or a poetic Zeus who should hurl his bolts against full form of verse. This was spectacular. Your imagery was, in my mind's eye, it danced. I could see the flames. I could see the bolt of lightning. I really enjoyed this, Laurent. I really did. And I'm going to post this to my page because I thought it was fabulous. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
And I would like to know what inspired your muse to write this poem.
My muse inspired me to write the poem in celebration of my muse. Kind of a twisted thank you, if you know what I mean. It's up for debate, though.
Well, I enjoyed it. It was awesome. And thank you. And I would like to know what you thought of his poem, Bill.
Well, Laurent is always so creative and masterful in the way he expresses himself. All of this resonates really loud with me because it speaks to me of the creative process, and I get it. And in his third stanza, where he talks about writing is no weakling pursuit, what a pathetic group of people we are, that us poets. I mean, having to delve into emotions so many people would want to run from, forcing our feeble little brains to focus on things, words, constructions. And no, it's not a thing for weaklings. It can be very anguishing. And I get the idea of having a muse who's a bitch, and as he says in the last stanza, and if you work in publishing a long time, you'll come to find out almost every editor is a bitch of some sort. Not crazy. They tear your stuff apart. And you sometimes feel like a phoenix trying to resurrect from the ashes of something that they burn up all your and strip away all the beautiful stuff you think you've put into something you've written, only to have it tore up, torn apart, and go through the critical review process, which is a bitch. Putting it like
thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Laurent. Again,
thank
Laurent,
you
just always deliver.
Thanks, Bill. Thank you, Bill.
And Gwen, what did you think?
Oh, I love these. I've commented on this before. It was such a pleasure to hear it read again by Laurent. And I love the imagery and the descriptions of his muse. And mine, I saw some similarities in mine that were very much like that. And I really like these three stanzas here. Death is an absolute, a terminal refinement of life. Writing is a weakling pursuit. Mm-hmm. Will you deny your phoenix? Kill and destroy what you wrote in the past. Acknowledge the new, the visceral, open-painted eyes that see and bleed red from their whites. And make a brick of stone. Don't steal, steal from thin air from the fire inside of you. And I thought that was really, after rereading these again, those are really very motivating and, great stanzas. Great stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gwen. And Miss Katie, what did you think?
Oh, yes. I have never actually understood. I mean, I know what it means, my muse, and I think it's a wonderful concept to have something that's going to help you within your own mind to decide what you want to write. But this, I think, is brilliant. This is telling it as it is. A muse can be the best thing in the world to help you, but when things are not going so well and hearing that voice in your head going, well, you're not doing that right, I imagine. I can imagine can be a little bit, as I say, I don't have one, because I don't particularly like to be told what to do. I don't suppose anybody does. But I understand the concept of the muse, and I think it's a wonderful thing. And this was beautifully written. And like everyone else, I really enjoyed the last stanza. Cool. So cool. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Casey.
My pleasure. Thank you. All those with finicky muses. Laugh. Oh, my goodness. Okay, Miss Katie, we're ready for our next front page pick, please.
Okay. Dokie dokie. Here we have... excuse me, but I don't get the title right. I do apologize. L-I-T-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R- read this for us, please?
Oh, certainly. Just a minute. Let me get my act together here.
Oh, don't worry about that. No, nobody's act together here.
I got to go find it. We're doing mine, right? We're doing mine?
Yes.
Okay, very good.
If you want to tell us a little bit about what you did this for, so...
This is for a contest here on All Poetry, and I understand that it's worldwide, and it's called Queen of the Hive, and it's personifications of insects, which is really pretty bizarre, and you take on the embodiment of whatever you create with your muse to challenge other insects and destroy them, kill them dead, and it's pretty crazy. And so this has been just a different kind of thing entirely. So I hope you guys enjoy it, and if you get a chance to read any of the works that are in that contest, it's pretty amazing stuff. And they have had, I don't know, how old is the contest, Luya?
It runs until it's the last two standing, the last two insects standing.
Right, but I mean, it's like a year, it seems to me. It's a long, long ordeal. I mean,
yeah,
it takes quite a few months.
Yeah, it takes months to get through all of this, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So, you know, if you guys get a chance to check it out, there's some fabulous writing in there, and I think you would enjoy it. Okay. So I will begin my poem. This is called, "Oh, beautiful diadem in the hive, bouncing high, flying by, a sweet-bodied beauty, fully flavored, round and juicy, a lovely being in a splendid scene of a nonchalant moon moth thing. But your eyes are faux deceiving, green things, make-believing. Blind, blank pupil peeps, dancing daintily, unseen on pastel wings, flip-flopping, dusty death-like, ooh, full of horrors and old poison schemes. It's not magic, insect insanity. Watch me fly, my wings buzz beat, whirlwinds thrash rapidly. Then I drop down low, ready, revved up, ready to go. Flying haphazardly, poison is neutralized. The flitters and flies cutting, receding, then disappears, flatly failing, healing, lailing, and falling freely down into the hive's hard, gruesome floor, full of goop, guts, and gore, legs and slit, mandibles trip, blood on lips, your head. After hitting the cold hardwood floor. End poem.
Oh, this is just fantastic. Congratulations. I loved competing in this. It is brutal. And the object is to be what the insect is, how the insect lives and how it hunts and destroys its prey. You know, I liked where she says, watch me fly, my wings buzz beat, whirlwinds thrash rapidly, then I drop low, ready, revved up to go flying haphazardly, poison is neutralized. And then dust splutters, flies cutting, receding, then disappears. You know, it just was wonderful how you went into this battle and, you know, your wording and the ripping, especially that mandible drip, blood on lips, your head. I'm sorry, it's not funny, but to me it is because I battle with this.
You met a freak.
That was so gruesome, and I absolutely loved it. Oh, congratulations. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
And what did you think about her poem, Laurent?
Well, first of all, I would have loved to have read that only because it's the kind of poem you want to read. The imagery is so stimulating, so vivid, so horribly wonderful, so to speak, given the subject matter. It's something that has got to be fun to read, and I thought that Gwen's read of it had that perfect little dry, evil tone about it, yet not unhappy by the same time. The personification of that beast was wonderfully done. First person right from the get-go, and of course, love the ending and the twist on the ending. Could the ending have been different? Maybe, but I think it's fine, just the way it is. It delivers the gore, guts, and legs, and head, and everything else. The ability to use a little bit of abstraction and strong metaphors that can lead to a momentary puzzlement and then light shine and you see what she's done. It's really quite special, I think. You've, what's that old phrase? You've come a long way, babe. Something like that. Women's cigarettes I remember from back in the day. You've come a long way, babe. No, nicely done. Nicely done.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I was reading Suicide Suspect's comment on there, and her first stanza, Jesus, I do believe we have a new tarantula hawk. Do you know who the tarantula hawk is, Gwen?
You. Yeah, you.
Yes.
Ladies
and gentlemen, a new bringer of death. These were straight goods. It's like the title was an unveiling of a table of assassins like weaponry. The daunting picture was a clip of you loading the firearm with a click, slash, and sharpening blade with a swoosh of the swing. Congratulations. For him to give you high accolades, that is fabulous. Congratulations,
thank you.
Gwen.
Thank you.
Bill, what did you think of this battling insect?
Well, I think it's such a clever and difficult thing that Iris Rose pulled off in terms of getting out of her own life and own paradigm to take on the life and antics of something so far removed from her own reality. That is just incredible talent. In terms of the verse itself, my favorite aspect is just the language. And she incorporates these elements in assonance. Immediately, it seems almost like a free verse, but then as you move through it, you realize that there's it's not a structured rhyming scheme, but there's this quality of assonance through the playing off of sounds like rapidly and haphazardly. The assonance, and then these elements of alliteration, like goop, guts, and galore in the very last line, it kind of sticks in your ear. Goop, guts, and gore. I think that's the title of an upcoming poem in itself.
Thank you, Bill.
Next to last is the root, flatly falling, fleeting, failing, falling freely. So these little plays on phrase that Iris Rose has done, just expert.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Nikki, what did you think of this battling rap poem?
That wasn't me, was it? Were you speaking to me?
Mm-hmm. I surely was.
Okie dokie. Sorry. I think my ears are on mute as well as my mic. I really enjoyed this. Well, of course I enjoyed this. It was great. So well done, Gwen. I loved it. I took part in one of these things once before. I was some kind of lethal spider. That's what it was. How on earth can that fight something like an elephant or a big moose? I just stand on me and I'm gone. You know.
Yes, but a hornet does make you run.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, that's buzzing in your ear. Nothing worse. So I understand how difficult it can be to get yourself into that mindset. I got chucked out because I ended up making the spider's family help him to kill everybody. And then they made it into a business. So I think I got chucked. It was too hard anyway. But yes, I really enjoyed this so much. Thank you for that. The wording was just flip-flopping dusty death lice full of horrors and old poison schemes. I love that. So great. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Aw, thank you. And we're ready for our next poem.
And nextly, we have Scenery by Isaiah Destiny Yukulu. Terribly sorry if I didn't pronounce that correctly. And Bill, would you give this a read for us, please?
Sure. This is Scenery 4 by Zihi Destiny Aguhu. And it goes like this. Golden wax, uplooming moon clouds, hog plums, first fall. Monarch caterpillar, moon walks, river-banked vine, God on sponge guard, the morning star. Downing to wasteland floor, sun-ripe hog plum, what ifs? The lightning lining my ribcage, what if not? Grave lineup in the graveyard alleyway, fuels, foods, tears, black market rush. Broom rising to disgust the morning gust. Lap wings leaps on dew-laced lawns. Have not, harvest not. Frolicking from leaf to leaf. Sunbird chirps, unsung. In mixing with evening descants, kingfishers chirps and porn.
Thank you. I really enjoyed this poem by Izzy, where he was talking, he said he was haiku, nature, society, and spiritual. His imagery is just lovely. I loved where he was talking about the morning star, downing to wasteland floor, sun-ripe hawk plum, what if the lightning is lining my ribcage, what if not? You know, I like this question here, and I really enjoyed this poem, and congratulations on its front page pick. And what did you think about this poem, Laurent?
I kind of think that the individual stanzas are almost intended to stand alone. They seem loosely connected, being an example of a day from morning till night, But if you look at each one, it can easily be separated from its brother or its sister.
Mm-hmm.
Take the second stanza, monarch caterpillar, moonwalks, riverbank line, god on sponge gourd. If you take the point of view that all creatures are spiritually sacred and that everyone is their own god, or everything is their own god, then he's given us the caterpillar on the sponge gourd in such a clever way. Then the stanza, what ifs? The lightning lining my rib cage. What if not? I took that to mean, you know, life itself is full of what ifs. And so that made a really strong anxiety, the lightning lining my rib cage. And then the alternate thought, well, what if those things weren't there? What if there was no anxiety? And on and on and on. So even though it seems to hang together, it all seems to be creative and skillful enough to be standalone brevities almost. At least that's my take. And I love the phrasing, those kingfisher strips, nicely done.
Mm-hmm. You know, I loved his imagery, but just touching on the comment you said, when he wrote a poet, Carl, where he said, we are also not sure of how our lives are in Nicaragua nowadays. That's the puzzle in that line. It is painful, fearful, and tearful condition here. So then I send prayers to him and everyone. And you did catch on that, Laurent. Thank you. And what did you think about his poem, Bill, that you just read?
Well, I love the references to nature, and I noticed that Zihi is from Nigeria, so I feel like we're getting insight into the natural landscape there at his home, along with references to the array of avian species, and especially with the reference to the kingfisher and what was the other, the lapwing leaping, which is, I love nature poetry and I love bird related things. Maybe that's because I'm a little bird brained, but Zihi, thank you for a wonderful poem.
Thank you, Bill. And Gwen, what did you think?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. I like what Laurent said. It could be, you know, like different brevities the way it's constructed because it's not really tight within the transitions. But the other thing that strikes me after I read the little comment about Nigeria is the fact that they are in a war. And so this changes the kind of the tone to me now as he sees and recalls everything, you know, that's going on and the what if. The lightning lining my ribcage. That struck me as, well, what if he's starving? What if they don't have food? What if not? Grave lineup. And then the grave lineup in the graveyard alleyway. Jules food's tears. Black market rush. Broom rising to disgust the morning gust. And so I think that he's talking about the situation where he's living and the difficulties and, you know, possibly war that's, you know, really messing him up. So that's what it sounds like. Did a really great job in putting this together. At first, it's a little hard to catch on to, but then after reading it, reading through some of the comments and stuff, I think that's what he meant. I enjoyed this.
Mm-hmm.
It was good.
Thank you. Beautiful comic, Gwen. And how about you, Katie?
Thank you.
Hello. Oh, yes, it was. it just keeps moving. I can't ever find. Yes, I can see what everybody's saying about this. Each of those stanzas could stand alone. So beautifully done. I like that so much. I particularly like lapwing leaps on dew-laced lawns, have not harvest not. That's just so... You can see it. You can. It's so delicate. That's the word I'm looking for. It's delicately done, and it's
yes, it is.
It's got that sort of moves along beautifully. I think it's sort of a cadence to it, that makes it so light and so delicate. Very cleverly done. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you, Katie. And we're ready for our next poem, sweetheart.
Okay. And our next one is... Oh, come on, mouse. Come back. Here we are. I've got a mouse that goes off on a tangent by itself. So this is Entwined Melodies by Sachi. And Laurent, would you give this away to us, please?
All right. Entwined Melodies. Embrace me like moonbeams caress the sea. In a love sonnet, verses dance free. Plunge into the depths of my being, where passions ignite, unseen and freeing. Each heartbeat, a brushstroke on love's canvas, painting a masterpiece, passionate and grandiose. Cherish not just the dawn, twilight too, where love's shadows reveal a view. Break the shackles, let expectations fade, and soar on love's wings, unafraid. Together, we forge a symphony of the heart, with each note and masterpiece, art. Curiosity leads us through the maze, where secrets unravel in love's blaze. Love me not with familiarities held, but as a stranger, stories untold. In the realm of the extraordinary, we find a love revered forever entwined. End poem.
I do so enjoy hearing you read romantic poetry, Laurent. You did a beautiful read of this poem. I loved her beautiful rhyming couplet. I could comment on each one, but I guess the ones that I really liked was where she wrote, plunge into the depths of my being, where passions ignite, unseen and freeing. Each heartbeat, a brushstroke on love's canvas, painting a masterpiece, passionate and grandiose. You know, isn't that what we all want, for somebody to ignite our passions, and especially those that we don't expose to the world, but are our private passions that want to be freed, and, you know, to have your love and, you know, the brushstroke, just painted on a canvas, you know, a masterpiece. And I just thought this was beautiful, and I'm going to stop there because I could comment on each couplet. And you did a gorgeous read of this poem, Laurent. What did you think of Sachi's poem?
Laurent? I'm sorry. The third stanza, each heartbeat, a brushstroke on love's canvas, painting a masterpiece, passionate and grandiose. Sometimes we feel that way, that with each beat of our heart, we're adding to a scene that's being painted in which we are in, and it's being painted in real time. Now it does change. So you have to cherish not just the dawn, but the twilight too, the love's shadows reveal a few. I enjoyed the poem. I'm not familiar with Sachi, but she did a great job.
Thank you so much. And like I said before, wonderful read and great comment. How about you, Bill? What did you think of Sachi's poem?
Well, it has such a quality of longing to it. And I really appreciate how all these references to coupling have been elevated into something. From the beginning, where it talks about moonbeams, making us think that this interaction, this physical exchange, is something cosmic and naturally beautiful. And then it moves on to being compared with poetry, In a love sonnet, it says, it compares it with a work of art and the brushstrokes. So I really am impressed with all the different ways the writer has connected these two's physical involvement and elevated into something artistic while still holding true to the theme of longing and yearning. I love it.
Thank you. Nice comment, Bill. Thank you so much. And you, Glenn?
Yeah, I really thought this was, I liked the rhyme couplets. You know, everybody's really struck by that. And I liked the end rhymes. And I just thought it was a very well-constructed poem, and it flowed very well, and tender the way it expressed love, and I enjoyed it.
Thank you. Excellent comment. And how about you, Katie?
Yes, that was lovely. It really was. I liked the whole idea of entwined melodies. And that first stanza kind of sets it all up, doesn't it? Embrace me like moonbeams caress the sea. In a love sonnet, verses dance free. Which is true. You can, you know, you can be a little bit lighter with a sonnet, I imagine. But there's structure to it, obviously. But there's just each one of those are just so beautifully constructed. Well, constructed. Here we have each heartbeat, a brushstroke on love's canvas, painting a masterpiece, passionate and grandiose. Yeah, beautifully done. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you. And we are ready to sneak in one more front page pick, please.
Yeah, no problem. I'll just go back up and get one. Climbing. Going up. Oh, yes, here we have. Okay, we'll go for... I'll be with you in a moment.
And I want to wish... That's okay. I want to wish Laurent sweet dreams, but he's tired. So, sweet dreams, Laurent. Thank you.
Yeah, good night, Laurent. Have a good evening.
Good night, Laurent. Sweet dreams.
Sweet dreams are made of this. Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay. Next we have Pick by Gary Rubin. And Bill, would you give this a read for us, please?
Oh, what's going on here?
What's happening,
Ooh.
Folks?
Did you say okay. Gwen, right?
No, I said Bill.
Ooh. Oh, because it's for Gary Rubin. Bill?
Yeah.
Yes. I'm sorry.
Could you read the next poem, please?
Okay, yeah, I got it. Pick by Gary Rubin. Let me just fix my screen. This is called, Your Sly Crooked Smile. Not all smiles are straight. Your shamrock green eyes drank the twinkle of midnight stars, a sly, crooked silver sliver of moon smile hung beneath the soft features of your face. Inebriated, you slid your fingers in, twined with mine, placed an orange blossom-scented kiss, then led us down the French Riviera shoreline. Demanded that I strip and make love with you in the Mediterranean. Your silk dress slipped off your buttercream naked body as waves lapped rhythmically. The rolling sound of surf meeting sand muffled your moans, rather. Exhausted and sated, eyes closed. But the crooked smile snuck back onto your face, that smoky, graveled voice breathlessly promised our love would sail to discover the other six seas. End. I'm sorry butchering some of those words.
And that's fine. You know, this is a gorgeous poem by Gary Rubin. I love the photo that he picked out. And, you know, everybody has their own little quirks that we fall in love with. And with this one, it was your sly, crooked smile. And I loved his beautiful imagery, you know, where he talked that inebriated, slid your fingers in, twined with mine, placed an orange blossom-scented kiss, then led us down to the French Riviera shoreline, demanded that I strip and make love with you in the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
Your silk dress slipped off your buttercream naked body. So, you know, that is just, you know, the imagery in here of, you know, being with somebody that he loves. And I see that crooked smile for orange blossom kiss and to the Riviera and the Mediterranean. As she said, that was just beautiful, gorgeous imagery in Gary's poem. And what did you think about this? I don't know if you got to hear it, Katie. I mean, Gwen, did you get to hear the poem?
Yes. Yes, I did.
I would love to know what you thought about it.
I really enjoyed it. There are times, you know, in relationships where we're just, you know, all kinds of things happen, and I just like to hear, sometimes it's neat to hear people express those particular moments where, you know, you're either totally out
mm-hmm.
of it, or you're just pleasantly mellowed and not totally messed up, and that you're cute and you're lovable and adorable and all those wonderful things. And I think he captured this really well here. And it was with a nice touch of, you know, love and fond affection of memory.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed that. I thought that was really well done.
I agree. Thank you, Gwen. And what did you think about this poem, Katie?
Ta-da! Sorry. That was off again. Oh, dear. That little red light. I keep forgetting that little red light's on. I thought this was lovely, Matt, right from the start. Your sly crooked smile. That's, you know, that's lovely. It's noticing somebody right down to the fundamentals of the way they react to you and how they smile at you. It's lovely. And you have that first stanza. Not all smiles are straight. Your shamrock green eyes drank the twinkle of midnight stars. Isn't that lovely? Really beautifully done. So, yes, I enjoyed it very much. Thank you for sharing that, Gary.
And thank you. And, Bill, you did a lovely read of Gary's poem. What did you think of his poem?
Well, it sounded like a fascinating, intimate encounter. And looking at this next to last stanza where it talks about the rolling sound of surf meeting sand muffled your moans. And I might preface what I'm going to say now by just including that my other home is in the Caribbean. And I lived there nonstop for years. And as much as it may sound romantic, the idea of having sex on the beach, it's not as cool as you might think it is, because the muffling of moon, sand gets everywhere. The moans that he's writing about are very realistic, but it's not
mm-hmm.
always as pleasurable as you may think, because sand.
Well, that's why you come take a dip in the water afterwards, Bill.
Oh, goodness.
You made me laugh with that comment, Bill. Thank you.
And by the way, the tourists don't care too much.
Okay. And now we're into open poetry now.
Okay. I have
and
put up.
Just a quick comment. Just hold on before you go. poetic Picasso wrote in the group, that is why you skinny dip, Bill.
That's right.
Okay, we're ready.
Are you sure? Honestly, I love this. This show is so much fun. Okay, now this one, I'm just going to a little explanation. This is Paper Cuts by Naomi. I'm going to read this one because next up would be Frank's, and I would love you to read Frank's one, Luyu. So I'm going to read this one.
Okay, I'll give it a try.
So I'll do Naomi's now. This is by our wonderful Naomi, and it is just disappeared. Paper Cuts by Naomi Sarah. Instead of going out, I sit down, staring at the hardwood from swollen eyes for long minutes. My sheets still stained with last night's fuck. My eyes closed. I dream. Run a bath. Lie down in it. My body too big. My hands not mine. I tremble. Swear too much. These can't be my hands. Hot liquid flows on my cheeks. I manage to crawl out. The mirror spits out the image of a stranger with wrinkles too hollow, perfumed with the desire to die and honey. Gray sky, maybe blue, microorganisms grow at the bottom of my coffee cups, crammed on top of a heap of other dishes with caked on ketchup streaks and mustard stains, stuck on pieces of rotting egg and clumps of cheese. A vomited pile scattered across the dirty countertop that stinks almost as bad as my sick life of paper cuts. End poem.
I was listening to you read this fabulous poem by Naomi. Naomi's always, her poems are so emotional, and her imagery and metaphors are just so deeply powerful. You know, I don't know if she's, you know, is crying from her swollen eyes because her heart is broken with, you know, with the decision she's made, or that she's gotten sick, because it could be both. You know, there is that regret that we have the next morning after being with somebody that night, and, you know, we, you know, especially if it's somebody that you've loved before, an old lover or somebody you broke up with, and the way that they make you feel when you look at yourself in the mirror spits out the image of a stranger with wrinkles too hollow, perfumed with the desire to die in honey. You know, when we've done something we didn't mean to do or wanted to do, and then we look at ourselves in the mirror, and, you know, nobody beats yourself up worse than you can beat your own self up, you know. And when I've go to eat breakfast, especially if I've gotten up the next morning, everything tastes bitter. Nothing tastes good in my mouth. And then, you know, you just literally stick to your stomach and you just vomit. And, you know, where it says a vomited pile scattered across the dirty countertop that stinks almost as bad as my sick life of paper cuts. When we make a bad decision, and basically we're just hurting ourselves and cutting ourselves, and this is just really agonizing, because we all can put ourselves in this spot where we've made love to somebody that, damn it, why'd I do it? And I would love to know what you think about this poem, Gwen.
Oh, my goodness, yes. yeah, this is a very deep poem, very deep and very dark and very laden with emotion. And, you know, it's what she's doing is the recollection by the art of the experience. She goes into this self-flagellation, her emotional self-flagellation of, I shouldn't have done this, and look at this, and, you know, that kind of thing that you recall, that this happened again kind of thing, and, you know, da-da-da, you get this feeling, and so, as you had expressed, too, that, you know, here I am, I'm on the other side of this, and, you know, gee, I didn't get the ring, and I didn't get the guy, and he's gone, and I'm here still back alone, and what the hell did I do? And so I thought that this was well captured in her closing stanza, a vomited pile scattered across the dirty countertop that stinks almost as bad as my sick life of paper cuts. And, you know, that real depressing reality of, oh, man, here I am again.
I
thought she really projected that emotions and built it up very well, and the imagery that went along with it was just exceptional. So, you know, it made it feel very real. And I, you know, kudos. Great write.
Yeah, and Naomi is commenting in the group, a time in my life when I wasn't at my best. Well, girlfriend,
I think we've all been
with you down that. We've been down that line. Oh, my goodness. It is so hard. You know, if we could all, we'd all be hugging each other right now if we were in a coffee shop and toasting each other to, you know, hope we learn better. But sometimes that doesn't work.
Next time.
Yeah. Hi. And Miss Katie, what did you think? And thank you, Gwen.
Oh, this was so, so sad. I mean, we know, we know what happened. We know that our bodies...
Still thinking. What happened?
Katie?
I'm so sorry.
It was coming in and out. That's okay. That's all right.
I'll just check my connection. Oh, okay. How am I doing now? Is it okay?
Fabulous.
Okay, okay. Yeah.
Good.
Okay, I will. Thank you. I think it was absolutely beautiful. I think sometimes our brains try and teach us a lesson that we never listen to. Our bodies can't help but respond. The excitement. It's the excitement. It's the newness of it all. And you go into this thinking, this is going to be fun. And the next day, of course, it's not. So, as you said, Lulu, we've all been there. And I'm so sorry that that painful encounter had to happen. But beautifully written. Anyway, so thank you for sharing.
Yeah, thank you. And Bill, what did you think of Naomi's poem?
Just tragic, tragic, tragic. And so often when I read Naomi's poetry, there's seldom a time when I haven't come from it without wanting to give her a hug. And I know she said that she wrote this a long time ago. What I'm getting from this is just about a state of decay, and that decay is happening on a physical level. Something that she says, you know, about looking at an image in the mirror and seeing a stranger. But the state of decay isn't only, you know, physical in terms of her form. But, I mean, it's all around. In that dirty kitchen sink with dishes streaked with ketchup. And even in her, in the sky where these microorganisms are growing, the laundry. I just wouldn't want to see Naomi's kitchen for anything.
Well, it just could be metaphors. Did you think about that? Where, you know, where you made a bad decision and you feel dirty afterwards for making that mistake. Yeah.
Oh, the regret.
So, yeah, the regret, you know.
Because Paper Cuts, which is the title, Paper Cuts won't kill you, but they sure will sting.
It hurt a lot.
Yeah, and they bother you for days.
Mm-hmm.
You text them, ow,
You wash the dishes, it stings. You no matter what you do, there's that cut. It's a constant reminder for days after bad decisions. And Naomi says that was a metaphor and that she's very neat. Thank you, Naomi. Okay, so now that we got that all straightened out, we're ready for our next one, Miss Katie.
Okay, and the next one we have is, here we are, Cordoba, by Poetic
Cordoba.
Cordoba, yeah, I can't even speak English. now, Luyu, I would love to hear you read this, please.
Okay. All right, so here we go. Cordoba by Poetic Picasso. Beneath the drifting clouds hovering above lives a thriving Andalusian city to discover. Ancient civilizations and cultures reigned beyond foothills of the Sierra Mountains, where emperors and caliphs conquered our poets describes enriched a history to uncover in the narrow alleyways and cobblestones by the lovely squares with Moorish fountains, cathedrals of Gothic ceilings and florid retables to boost a beauty of archaeological magnificence. Renaissance towers with impressive windows with porticos of interlacing columns by fronds, stucco panels and floral patterns decorating the old synagogue with the Sephardic elegance beyond Alcazar and setting sheltering mazes of cypress trees intercept by ponds. Behold Roman temples with Corinthian sills and mausoleums built by cylindrical measure beyond courtyards beckoned with orange blossoms flourished a Palestine wonder of Madiant de Sahara. Medieval walls enclosed the quarter ahead as cistern allowed low and leisure to the bridge of Augustus and the Guadalquivir River where lie ashlars belonging to the gateways to Cordoba. In poem. And I apologize because I have been stuttering all week. When I get tired, I stutter. So I'm sorry for any mispronounced words, Frank, but I did my best with my silly tongue. Okay, so I would love to know what you thought of this beautiful poem that he wrote, Gwen.
Oh, my goodness. Cordoba. Oh, yes, I love Cordoba. And I always think of Fernando Lorca and Cordoba in the poem he wrote, too. And it was Luna Roja, Paqui Negro, and beautiful. This is just so rich in imagery. And he did such an exceptional job of describing it. You know, I almost feel like I'm there. You know, I almost feel the hot, humid heat of Cordoba. And I think he did just a great job of just really, you know, taking you around the area and taking in all the cultural experience that it has to offer. And, you know, from all the centuries of different people who have been there and left behind their imprints in art as well as architecture. It's just beautiful. But this was just really well done and compliments Cordoba very nicely. Good job, Frank. Nice poem.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. You know, I love architecture. It's just something that just mesmerizes me. Artwork where I have to touch the walls and I have to take photographs. And, you know, I just become enchanted as if I'm traveling back through time, you know, and in this stanza right here, cathedrals of Gothic ceilings and florid retables to boast a beauty of
architectural magnificence, renaissance towers with impressive windows, with porticos of interlacing columns in front, you know, just the Roman temples, you know, the tiles, the mausoleums, the cisterns where the waterways, how they carried water, all this just fascinates me to no end. You know, I agree with you 100%, Gwen. It's just beauty to witness something like this and experience it. And, you know, I just thought this was just absolutely gorgeous ode, as Uncle Ernie said, to go and visit it. And what did you think, Katie? Thank you, Gwen.
Yes, I would love to go and visit. It sounds wonderful. I love architecture too. I must admit, it sort of calls to you, makes you think about what has happened around a particular area. I came up, there was a church down a sort of a valley kind of thing. I passed all the time whenever I drove up into the Highlands, and I didn't ever stop. And then one day I did, and I took tell you how many pictures I took, hundreds of them. It was just so fascinating. But yes, so I can understand entirely and beautifully, beautifully written and read. So thank you, my dear, for sharing that with us. It was great.
Thank you. And Bill, what did you think of this beautiful poem by Frank?
Well, I see that Frank's handle is Poetic Picasso, and I understand that better now, because he has painted such a beautiful image of this city I want to go to now. And he's touched on all the things, the infrastructure, the terrain, the history. What a testament to Cordoba. And, you know, it's one of those writings where you're suddenly drawn away from the screen or the paper and finding yourself in another land and experiencing it, smelling it, appreciating it. So, Frank, I'm ready to go to Cordoba, but only if you'll go with me, Louie.
Thank you. And we... Thank you, Bill. And we are ready for our next poem.
Okay. I thought I had it. Here we are. Bear with me a moment. Oh, yes. Okay, I've got this one. Now, this is Lose 10 Pounds of Ugly Fat by Lawrence.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I'm so tempted, but I know I have to do this. Gwen, would you give this a read for us, please? I don't know if you have ever experienced Lawrence 67's work, but you will love it.
Oh, okay, thank you. Begin poem. Lose 10 pounds of ugly fat by Lawrence 67. Hi, everybody. Have you ever looked in the mirror after the holidays or a big meal and just got grossed out at that extra weight that you have on? Well, never fear about dead weight. Again, here at Jubal's Guillotine and Things, we have what you need to get rid of that extra unwanted poundage. Our guillotines come in sizes small, extra large, and humongous. For them big jobs, y'all have to do is just put your neck out, push the button, and Jubal's Guillotine takes care of everything else, and we are having a sale 2-for-1 this weekend. Only so get one for you and one for your loved one. This has been a Jubal De La Chinga promotion, all rights reserved, one coupon per person. Please, and this tip executioner is extra. Thank you very much. Inform.
Oh, my God, you read that so perfect. Oh, Gwen, that was a perfect read. I have got to tell you that with Lawrence, I was not expecting that ending where it is The guillotines come in sizes small, extra large, and humongous for them big jobs. All you have to do is just put your neck out, push the button, and Jibo's guillotine takes care of everything. And I agree. Some people have fat heads, and they need a couple of pounds. Oh, my God. This cracked me up, and you did a fabulous read of this. Oh, my goodness. So let's get some comments. What did you think about this poem, Bill?
Well, I had a bit of a lash, a laugh and a lash. And Lawrence is so funny. And it's interesting that it talks about losing weight and how we normally think of that as something around our midsection, but yet he's using a guillotine reference for losing that fat, which speaks to fat heads to me, which adds to the humor in this. Really funny stuff, Lawrence.
I agree. What did you...
Nobody can tell.
Yeah, man. No, not after France kept that going for a while. How about you, Gwen? You did such a fantastic read of this poem. I thoroughly enjoyed it. What did you think?
Oh, I thought it was really cool. I could really get into it because it takes me back to when I was like in the sixties and, well, I'm gonna date myself, 60s and 70s, and you'd be listening to the radio and you'd be like way cool cruising and you'd hear this big spiel like car dealer thing or some kind of sale going on somewhere, and it was just one of those kind of radio blurbs that really got to me, and I thought, oh yeah, I thought he captured that so well. And, you know, the way he structured it and everything, I thought, oh my goodness, yeah, could be on TV, could be on radio. Good job.
Yeah, agreed. And how about you, Katie?
Wow. That was so well done. That was brilliant. I mean, that it deserved everything you gave it, let me say. He never fails to make me smile. At one point, he was so great with his stories about the cats that I kept thinking of them as two entities. I forgot it was him that was writing it, but I kept thinking of these two cats as two separate entities that I was engaging in conversation. Madness, but he's so clever. Yeah, you have to excuse my voice. My voice is going a little bit. My mouth's very dry, so please excuse that. But yeah, very funny as usual. So funny. And as Lou, you pointed out, our guillotines come in sizes. Small, extra large, and humongous. Oh my goodness me! I
thought
that.
Yeah.
Carry on, dear. Yeah, what we.
Yeah, he caught that perfectly. You're right.
Yeah, so good. I frequently try to lose weight, and I do, but it just keeps finding me. It keeps coming back and finding me again.
You keep running away, but it keeps finding you, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it sneaking up on me? Oh my God, that was hilarious. You're so funny, girl. Oh my goodness. Okay, I'm smiling so much my cheeks hurt. Oh, okay. We are ready for the next one, our next poem.
And next we have To Lose Myself Alongside You, Maybe in Another Life by Ben Hart. Gwen, could I ask you to read this? Oh, you've already read, haven't you? Sorry.
I'd read it again. I can read this.
Are you sure? Oh, that's great. My voice is completely glowing.
I can read it.
Thank you so much. So we have To Lose Myself Alongside You, Maybe in Another Life by Ben Hart. Thank you.
Okay. To Lose Myself Alongside You, Maybe in Another Life by Ben Hart. Begin poem. 1.
does your heart even ask for me? Will you love me?
Mm.
When my every hello isn't followed by a question? When my every lost was not longer alongside you? When my every story doesn't end so wanting? When my every scar isn't played against attempts at trust? When my two hands can build more than a less blank page? Like a home from walls around trauma and mirages of the mind. Will you love me without world's end depending on it? Will you ever pick that pomegranate beating behind oxygen's orchard? Will you love me if it kills me, finally? Or have I, in trying, run out of time and failed to write a happy ending again? Two. It's an etiology. I. You lay on the bank of the river guilt, thoughts between tides, eyes flying, after the aggrieved, the flown, the impromised, cross false stepping stones, the Venus, fly-trapped lily pads, before you drown yourself in the name of time and drift out of shape. Two. Pillows of puffballs sink a labored psyche into daydreams of odysseys rising in fireflies, loathsome, becoming one by one, summer's prominence. Three, bruised, blued to this day by who you once were before schema therapy, by who you would be had he kept a good house, by who you will have been upon healing the nebula and fading into starlight's reign. Four, siren. I dreamt I was just a whale fall in the depths of you and never woke again. Five. Eagle, she calls, don't fly too far. Don't be mislaid from my living eyes. I will not weather it to lose myself alongside you. Three. Muse, I leave you now, but trust me, love. I'll be back someday to breach the walls of your heart. And the only men I send to die for me will be the protagonist of these poems, in which I lost enough of myself to call it suicide. And I'd be damned if that's not enough. You will love who I become because I keep my promises and told you then I would never love another. So brace my love, because I am bringing destiny back, and she's never looked more like you. End poem.
You know, you read Ben's home beautifully, you know, the talk of love and love being denied, and then the person telling you why they don't love you, so you do everything to change yourself to bring them back, you know, and you know, and it's just so funny because when you love somebody so much and you look in their eyes, can you not tell that they love you? Can you not see the pain of losing you? It's just ripping them apart. And, you know, especially his, you know, like he says, he wrote an odyssey or adventure. You know, his last odyssey, you know, so deeply painful. You know, saying, but trust me, love, I'll be back someday to breach the walls of your heart. And the only men I send to die for me will be the protagonist of this poem, in which I lost enough of myself to call it suicide. And I'm going to stop reading there because if I keep reading, I will be in full-blown tears by the end of this, you know. This is, this is to me somebody who understands what love is, who understands what pain is, who understands what the desire, you know, yeah, there's, you know, that old saying that men say, there's a million fish in the sea. Well, yeah, I hope you find one without STDs or herpes. You know, I just, it just, it's amazing to me how the one that would love you through everything, no matter what may come, no matter what may happen, they'll stand by you. And I'm talking, you know, not cheating on you and not, you know, making you miserable, but they only have eyes for you. And, you know, I've seen marriages where they've been married 50, 75 years. And when they look at their wives, it's as if they were looking at them when they were 16 years old. They don't, the life that they developed isn't the lines on their face, but it's the lines of the fingertips of their fingers that touch your hand and your back and your face. You know, it's just a, you know, it's this poem, whether it's true or not, is just so real that I cannot believe that in some way he has not felt this or somebody has made him feel this. And I could be wrong, but the way he writes, it's as if his pen bleeds. And you did such a beautiful read on this poem of Ben. I would love to know what you think, Gwen.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it's definitely written from the point of view of a person who knows love, who's been there, and who realizes that there's all kinds of, you know, prerequisites to love that people put out there. And he's naming off a few of them. And he names, you know, and he talks about vulnerability and you know, loss of personhood, kind of, sort of. And so he knows about this emotional relationship stuff. And then he goes on, and then he talks about the past, about the guilt, and probably the fights, the disagreements, the grievous emotions, blah, 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 the false stepping stones that you think it's all better and it's going to get the all betters and go back together. And then you, before you drown yourself in the name of harm, because then you realize it's not going to go back together. And then he describes the pillows or puffballs, describing the confusion that kind of experience brings to your mental health and your soul, and just makes you feel terrible, you know. And in the end, he starts to descend into how he starts to feel. He has to do something about how he feels. So he has to have therapy. And he's looking to be healed, his soul, you know? And then, you know, he has this revelation that he's wondering, I dreamt I was just a whale fall in the depths of you and never woke again. Ooh, that's death. Ooh. And then some comes and snatches him up. Eagle, she calls, don't fly too far, don't be mislaid. From my flying eyes, I will not weather it to lose myself alongside you. So there's this reality that finally hits him that, ooh, this is a bit destructive. And the muse, I leave you now, but trust me, love. I'll be back someday to breach the walls of your heart. Ooh, that is so poignant. Love. You know? And I just think that this was just so well laid out. I like these last three stanzas. And told you then I would never love another. So brace my love, because I'm bringing destiny back. And she's never looked more like you. Woo! All that pain to
say
that again.
That's a lot of pain. And you
That's
read
a
it beautifully.
Pain.
Thank you so much. And I enjoyed your comment. And Katie, I would like to know what you thought of Ben's poem.
Very. It does touch you when you discover that, again, there's someone in pain. And there's nothing we can do except send out those waves of, you know, be strong, keep going. I know they say time will heal. And of course, time does dull the pain a little. But pain like that, it won't go away. And you look at everybody and everything in a completely different way than you did before. And that takes a lot of getting over. So beautifully, beautifully put on the screen, beautifully written, and very well read too, Gwen. Thank you for that. And thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Katie. And Bill, I would like to hear your comment on Ben Thum.
Well, I love almost everything I read of Ben's. And I've heard a couple of you talk about how this is written by someone who understands love. We have a little different take on it. For me, this is written by someone who knows self-deprecation, who knows unrequited love. And it all begins with asking this question, as if, can I be loved even in these kind of conditions and situations, like when my every hello isn't followed by a question, when my scars of the past aren't interfering with now. So that it all speaks to conflict to me. In the second part, it talks about a river of guilt, and the river of guilt leads to the ocean of regret. So what I'm hearing in this is a little bit of regret and conflict in terms of how someone may perceive how they need to be versus how they are and what they do. And it is very sad.
Yeah.
Very emotional, Ben.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you've ever been in love with somebody that made you feel that nothing that you do is right, that they criticize you, and, you know, you just, no matter how much you change, it's never enough for them, and you hope that, you know, you wish they would come back in your lives, and you would love to have them in your life. But then as time goes by, for me, it's time. Time, it doesn't let time heal for me. It was that time allowed the love that I felt, those rose-colored glasses, to fall away so I could see that it wasn't me that was the problem. It was them. And, you know, in that case, that, you know, that's when, you know, I tell myself, you know, it wasn't anything that I did wrong, because it wasn't anything I did wrong. And, you know, I move on. And it's just something when they see you move on that you want, they want you back, you know, do I want to get, like Naomi said, those paper cuts again? And it's like, hell, but no. Not for me, no thank you. I'll have to just kiss my cat on the nose for a while, so. You know, and sometimes, you know, like I said, we beat ourselves up worse than we should because we weren't, you know, we don't believe in ourselves sometimes, and it takes that time to, you know, you kept your promises, but they didn't. Yeah, so this is what I love about poetry, all the different views and different opinions, because we all see things different. And sometimes we see the same, sometimes we don't. But this is what fascinates me about poetry. And we could sneak one more in.
Okay, I have a little quandary.
Kitty.
Yes, I have a little quandary. Jack Tomkovic wanted his poem. Wanted his poem to be read by Laurent, and Laurent's not here.
That was a request, so we will save it, and I'll put it at the beginning of next week's show, and I'll let Laurent know. Maybe we can find, let's see if there's another, I think most of it. You got something? Okay, let her rip. Let her rip.
I'm just going back to front page pics because there ain't no more open poetry. So what we have here is we have poems picked by Selfridge Mojo Mojo. So I'll give this a read one. I'll give this one a read. Okay. Sorry, I can't pronounce your name properly. I do apologize. A breathing exercise.
It feels like falling off the bone when my muscles lose their grip. If only they went with a place to grab, to hold your weight. Bear with me. As you slip on another day, if just an inch of what is said about birds and flowers was true, it would go far towards being fine, sitting for a minute or two in a chair, by a window, with a screen, choosing what to let in. The look of a bird so yellow, it must be the sun trying to find a way through a heavy cloud. A tea olive straightening the room with a scent of quiet smiling. End poem.
He got a bronze. Congratulations on your front page pick on a contest. Adelia Prado poem prompt that he wrote for. I've got to say that I enjoyed this beautiful poem that he wrote here, the description of the yellow bird. And, you know, he was talking about his muscles, you know, that we all got to work on, you know, because you don't use it, you lose it. And, you know, I loved where I heard Katie reading. He's got a fascinating self-rising mojo. I don't know. That is just such a cool name. But I loved where he talked about the look of a bird so yellow. It must be the sun trying to find a way through a heavy cloud, a tea olive straightening the room with a sense of quiet smiling. Oh, my God, his imagery is just breathtaking. I really enjoyed this. I love my garden. I love flowers. And I love, I'm a bird watcher, bee watcher, butterfly watcher, anything that's moving. So I would love to know what you thought of this poem. Bill, are you still with? Oh, no, Bill dropped. Okay, what did you think of the poem? Yeah, what did you think of the poem, Gwen?
Oh, I really enjoyed it. I love the imagery, and this first metaphor just was so cool. I thought, I have to borrow that. It feels like falling off the bone when muscles lose their grip. I thought that was so cool. And yeah, that, it is true. That's a neat, yeah, it does feel like that, you know. And there were so many tasty little things in here. It's just an inch of what it is said about birds and flowers was true. It'd go far toward being fine, sitting for a minute or two in a chair by a window with a screen, choosing what to let in. And I thought that was really clever, the way that he ended that particular line.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. It was a great poem.
I agreed. And beautiful comment. And you did such a great read on this, Miss Katie. I would like to know what you thought of Self-Rising Mojo poem.
I thought it was brilliant. I really did. I'm sorry. I hurried it a little bit more than I would like to so that everybody could make a comment. So I apologize for that. I would have made it a little bit slower. But I thought it was lovely. And again, we have that, as Gwen just said, sitting by a window with a screen, choosing what to let in. The look of a bird so yellow, it must be the sun, trying to find a way through the clouds. Lovely. Very well written, beautifully. But yeah, I could see it. I could actually see it. But I did like the one about the muscles.
Mm-hmm.
So cool. That was a good, that was a good few lines.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah, mm-hmm. I like that a lot. So, great. Thank you for sharing.
Well, I want to thank everybody for calling in tonight. Thank you, Katie. You saved me because I don't know where Great Eyes went. And thank you for calling in and helping me during your vacation. I deeply appreciate it. Thank you, Gwen, for your fabulous reads and your comments. I really enjoyed your comments on Ben. And I want to thank Laurence. And I want to thank Bill for their fabulous reads and comments. Can't do this without you, men. And I want to thank Bill for everything she does and for Frank for hanging out in the group. And Naomi for hanging out in the group with us. I love you guys. Buenas noches. Mm. Besitos a todos. Good night, everybody. I love you.
You too. Night, night.
Good night, Gwen. Good night, Katie. Hello? Katie? Katie, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, that was a fabulous show. Thank you so much. Front page picks, I don't know if we're live, but at any event,
yes.
I probably should put you in the